This is an oral history interview between Norma Angus, who worked at the PDC, and Simon Johnson. The date is the 22nd of April 2018. Norma, how old were you when you started working?
You mean when I
when you left school? Yes.
Yes, there was a job waiting for me. It was just after the war. Labour was so short. I'd worked in the holidays at an office, and they were waiting for me to turn 15. Right. And so I jumped in the deep end, and I enjoyed that very much. I married my husband when I was only 19. Then that took me out into the rural community. And when my husband and I decided to come back into the city, I was 41.
Mm. So
that's when I applied for the position.
Yeah. So what the clerical job that you did when you started work, what organisation was that with, and what kind of work was it?
That was the herd testing office, and I was on. I wasn't on the herd testing sheets. I was on the clerical side, the keeping the books and the reception and typing.
What town was this?
This is all in Palmerston.
Oh, in Palmerston, yes. Mm. And what was your highest qualification that you did at school before you left?
I didn't make school C. Mm. That was my fifth form, was the year I turned 15.
Right.
And I had elderly parents. They encouraged me to take this position, and I never regretted it.
Right, right.
I still keep in touch with those girls too.
Mm. And this would have been probably quite normal at the time for people to leave school at 15 and get straight into work.
It was.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you see, it was after the war, and we were bringing immigrants out to fill positions, and the labour was so short.
Mm. So you started work at the PDC when you were 41. Mm. Was this when did you have a family at that stage?
Yes. Adult family.
So they were. You started work essentially when the family were independent.
Well, I started work in the city, but I had always worked beside my husband in the rural scene.
Sure.
But I'd always been a keen sewer, and I was a customer of the fabric department long before I became staff.
Right. Now, you mentioned working alongside your husband. What kind of work were you doing?
Well, I was milking cows.
Oh, right. So you were essentially a dairy farmer.
That's right.
Yeah. And when you moved into town, you simply wanted to find more work, because obviously you couldn't milk cows in the city.
No. Well, our aspirations changed, and my husband he had earth moving schools, and he found work in that area, which we both kept our jobs for 12 years. I was 12 years with PDC.
Mm, mm.
And that was when we decided to go offshore and work in Australia to be near our family. But it was we'd always said it would be a limited time.
Yes. So what year was it when you started working with PDC?
1976, I think.
76, right. And what was your job interview like? Who took it, and what kind of questions did they ask of you?
That was Mr. Vern Lumley.
Yes, I've met him.
He is a lovely man. Mm. And there were a lot of applicants, actually, for the position, but I don't know why he was swayed. But perhaps it was the fact that I had just sewn the the wedding frock and bridesmaids' frocks for my daughter's wedding. And I was, my daughter had gone back to Australia, and I was fairly, I suppose, relaxed but despondent because she had just gone, and so I wasn't nervous. And well, whatever swayed Vern, I've been eternally grateful because I had some wonderful years at PDC.
Now, the job that you applied for, what was its title?
Oh, well, I was just a fabric, just a salesperson.
The salesperson, yeah. Yeah. And who was your immediate superior?
That was Mr. Gooding, Graham Gooding.
Mr. Gooding, right, yes.
But he was wanting to retire, and they weren't able to find his replacement. And suddenly I jumped in the deep end. I was offered the position of buyer, and he stayed on for about 6 months and trained. I trained with him.
Right. Now, as the other PDC people who I've interviewed explained, a buyer was essentially the head of department who bought the stock and chose what stock to buy. Yeah, and they were semi-independent people, is that correct?
We were answerable to the executive.
Sure.
And the other girls may have told you that we had buyers' meetings with the executive. They kept us in touch with what was required, what was the promotions that were coming up, and it was our responsibility to go back to our staff and pass that message on to them. So, you know, the communication was wonderful, as was the staff training.
How many staff did you have?
Five. And then I had part-time casual people.
Right.
When I first took over, the fabrics were housed in the old Pegdoms building, and then later PDC bought the club hotel, and that is where we had our department. We had a wonderful display team. They would come over and do all the windows, draping the windows, and we shared. It wasn't just fabrics. Mr. Graham Myers was the merchandise manager at Home Appliance, and he was, he and Mrs. Joy Tarr were responsible for the sewing machines and later the knitting machines. They were all housed in the one shop. Yes. But could I tell you about the occasions? There were two occasions that really put our fabric shop on the map. And Mr. Myers was very strong on promotion. It was early days for TV commercials, but he arranged a couple of commercials. But what I'm thinking of now is the fashion parade that we held up in the Waldings tea rooms, and we asked wholesalers for fabric lengths of certain fabrics, and they very generously donated those, and then we had garments made from Simplicity patterns, and on the night, and we used local girls, some were staff, to model, and on the night the manager of Simplicity patterns, he was in attendance, and he addressed the audience and the display department had draped beautiful displays in the foyer of the, as you came out of the lift, and Mrs. Kay Rankin, who was a 2ZA, the local radio station. She was employed by them. Well, she was our compeer, and she did a marvellous job. And fortunately, I can't recall the manager of Simplicity, but he was a charming fellow with a good sense of humour, and he was in the store the next day, and we really had a boomer season. It really kicked off the spring season. And there was opportunities too for the shoe department and the accessories to promote their goods as well. So that was one very big promotion that Mr. Myers orchestrated, and we did well. Can I tell you then about another promotion?
Please.
It isn't to do with fabrics at all. It was the early days of Alison Holt, and the Kitchen Whiz was just being introduced. And
this was a food processor.
Yes, that's right. This was the very first model out. And Mr. Myers approached me, and because of my rural connections, he asked me, could I alert the Country Women's Institute, whom I have always been a member of, to issue them a cordial invitation to come on a certain evening at again in the Waldings Tea Rooms to watch Alison Holt's demonstration. And my husband said to me, if you want one, please feel free to buy one. I said, no, I'm only going because I feel I need to fly the flag with these ladies that we've introduced, who we've invited. Well, by the time Alison had whizzed up and made the shortcake, then she'd put the raw apple and sugar in and whizzed that up and had an apple pie, I was sold. And I told all and sundry that everyone should own a Kitchen Whiz. And I still believe that.
I can remember the advert on TV, and the line was something like, a whiz in the kitchen.
That's right.
And that's what it was. Yeah. So Alison Holst, who of course was and still is to a degree, a very famous New Zealand icon for cooking, she came along and demonstrated the machine.
That's right.
And this was in the Waldings Tea Rooms.
That's right.
Right. Now, why was it called the Waldings Tea Rooms? Was this after Joe Walding, the MP?
Yes.
What was the connection?
Well, he owned that business.
Oh, I see. And he sold his pies there, no doubt.
Yes, and they had a wide variety of food, and it was a very busy, busy place.
I mean, traditionally, Joe Walding was associated with pies. I mean, probably his political opponent made a lot of that connection.
I can't really remember that. I can remember the man. I remember the lady that managed it better. But it was well used by the staff.
So was the Waldings Tea Rooms, was that seen by customers as part of PDC, even though it was owned by the Walding family?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could just move from the shop into the tea rooms?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. And you had another story you were about to tell me.
Well, it's about another TV commercial.
Mm.
And Mr. Myers again, he wanted to introduce microwave ovens.
Mm.
And he wanted a face that was familiar with PDC customers. And in his wisdom, he chose me. Now, this time, I had done a little demonstration on a sewing machine, because Mrs. Tarr, who ran the sewing machine department wasn't available that day, but that was a non-speaking part, and all you saw really were my hands and the feeding the fabric through. But this was a bit different. I had a script to learn, and it was it ran like that: when I came home from the shop, and I could defrost the chicken and I could have it cooked in no time and so on. And because by that stage a lot of our customers knew the buyers' faces, I was chosen. Well, it was filmed in the old church behind the Presbyterian. It was in the old hall behind the Presbyterian church. And there was a big van parked out in Ashley Street, and all these cables, lots of staff round, and they were very supportive. Was Norma this and Norma that? And we had to have several takes because I hadn't got the timing just correct. And right at the finish, I said, during one break, I said, "Look, I'm sorry, I'm not Alison Holmes. I'm only an amateur at this." And they said, "No, Norma, you're doing fine." At last, the producer out in the van said, "That's a take." Well, it was all over. And my goodness, I could have dropped dead and they wouldn't have known, because they just ignored me after that. Do you know, I could be out in my kitchen and I could hear that ad coming over, that commercial coming over, and hear my own voice, and I never saw it. By the time I got in here, it was all over. It was a flash. But that was an experience. But that perhaps draws attention to the fact that the PDC were very strong on promoting. It was a wonderful store, and when people have their rebate coupons, they were very loyal customers.
Mm, mm.
And so you did get a rapport with your public.
Mm. Well, I read somewhere that around about the 60s, 70s, around 33,000 people in the Manawatu belonged to the co-op,
yes,
which of course PDC was part of, but there were other shops in Bulls.
Oh,
and
yes. And there were butchers.
We'll talk about that in a little while, because that's a very interesting side of the PDC story, because of course the PDC grew out of the co-op movement, which is an interesting thing in itself. So the advertisements you told me about, they were on national television.
Yes.
Was it a regional television at that stage, like they had, you know, WNTV1 for Wellington and AKTV2 and all that sort of thing, or was it just national television?
Look, I don't think I can answer that.
But it was on our television,
yes,
in Palmerston, at any rate, yes. Now, you've already indicated that the PDC staff were a fairly close-knit group. Were the bulk of the staff male or female? What would the percentages be, just off the top of your head?
Although I think there were a lot of male staff. You see, we had a menswear department and home appliance and hardware and so on.
Mm.
I think it would be 50-50.
Right. So generally the male-female split would be along the lines of the kinds of products being sold. So in hardware, there wouldn't have been probably any women.
No,
in hardware,
no.
And appliances perhaps would be mainly men too. Or?
Apart from Mrs. there were women in the home appliance, but Mrs. Tarr played a very important role with her sewing machines, and that those she was housed in with fabrics. She was her and Mr. Myers did all the purchasing.
Mm.
And the demonstrating.
Mm. How did the managers and the working staff interrelate? What were the relationships like?
Well, apart from going off to your buyer's meeting and coming back, and you were responsible for your staff, so you were responsible to make sure that all duties were covered and that they were providing the service that PDC required to the customers. I was very fortunate with my staff, very. Has anyone mentioned about the United Stores Group and how we went? We were part of a group, a buying group, throughout the two islands, and we met in Auckland twice a year for each season, and with fabrics, we could come in with other bigger stores, and that way we could reach the minimum that the wholesaler required to get that fine price.
Right.
I'm not explaining that very well.
No, I understand what you're saying, that essentially PDC and other large stores around New Zealand would buy in common to get a better deal.
That's right.
So that would be true of, say, fabrics or anything else for that matter.
Yes, they had, because before I left PDC, I went to the Fashion Forum, and that's where I was working when I went to Australia.
Right, because I think it might have been Vern or one of the other senior staff told me that Stephen Tindall, the later owner of the warehouse, was involved in this larger buyers network. Because I guess when you were buying, that there was still the issue of the business with tariffs and such like, and having an import license.
Oh yes, there were.
How did that impact on your buying?
Not greatly in fabrics.
Mm.
There was a gentleman from James Smith's. He used to go across to Thailand and buy the Thai silks.
Mm.
And that was all dealt with, so I wasn't involved with that. And we took a certain amount of that was allocated to us. But with the United Stores, there was a pre-select committee. They went up prior to the big meeting, and their responsibility was to, this was for fabric, to choose the items that should be put forward to the United Stores meeting. And that way we bought a lot of basics, like poplins and denims, and not so much the fashion end of it, because that's always very individual, but the basics. And of course we could enjoy a higher margin on those items that were taken up.
Were you still working at PDC when import licensing ended?
Yes.
How did that impact on?
But more on the China department. It didn't really touch. I can't remember it being of any importance, but I can remember conversations about the imported China that we were.
What other things can you remember about that period? Because of course, it was a watershed in our society when import licensing ended. It had impact, of course, on New Zealand producers of everything from shoes to whiteware. Mm. What can you remember about that period? Not necessarily just in your department, but in PDC as a whole, that you might have heard about from other buyers.
I can only remember it being impacted on the in the China department.
Mm. Mm. I guess because the we did have China companies in New Zealand. We had yes. Crown Lynn and various others.
That's right.
When you talk about remembering about China, what were the issues around China that you can remember from that time?
Well, the two figurines that you see there.
Yes.
I bought those at that time.
Mm.
And I can remember they were Portuguese, I think. And I can remember somebody making a remark about how the license was being spent on that particular type of thing, where maybe it should have been on another commodity. But I'm very vague on that area, because it wasn't really affecting me.
No, fair enough, yeah. So what kind of, you mentioned at the beginning about customer service and presenting a good front for the public. What were the most important rules surrounding working at PDC that you can remember, particularly those that might have been slightly different to workplaces you'd experienced before and after your time with PDC?
Well, your customer came first. Hmm. You were told never to approach a customer and say, "Can I help you?"
Hmm.
You would say, "How can I help you?"
Hmm.
"How can I help you?" You know, with the emphasis on I'm here, and you tell me what you want.
Hmm.
Again, I had a very, very good staff in that regard, on the fashion floor and the fabrics.
Hmm.
Yes.
When you had started at PDC and you were a shop assistant yourself,
yes.
What kind of induction were you given? You know, how were you trained, and what the HR now call behaviours were you told that were the most important? What you had to do?
Well, I went into a department that I was so familiar with.
Mm.
I was familiar with the staff because they had helped me on numerous occasions.
Mm.
As a customer.
Mm.
So, and I just slotted in.
Mm.
Mr. Gooding was, well, at the beginning there was no aspirations that I would be the next buyer, and he was giving guidance, one or two pointers, and I learnt very quickly that the customer is always right,
mm.
even if they're not.
Mm.
The first time that I had an irate customer, and I won that battle by saying, "I'm sure you're right." I felt a new confidence, you know.
Mm.
I knew I've got it.
Mm.
But again, because of the loyalty of co-op members, customers became regular, and we became familiar with their needs. In fact, when I was buying fabrics and the wholesalers would come and visit the shop, and we had a little room out the back where I do the viewing of the samples and that, I would think to myself, yes, Mrs. Slim would love that. And you got such a rapport that it helped with the buying. Well, it can't always be 100% right, of course. But buying clearing lines too was another. Used to have a day and leave here and go up to Auckland for the day and go to round the wholesalers with a certain amount in your mind that you could spend, and you bought end of lines and they were your sale. They were the bread and butter of your sale.
So sale items were not necessarily items that you couldn't sell. There were items that you were able to get on the cheap from your suppliers and then sell cheaply at the shop.
Yeah. Along with the ones that for some reason hadn't sold and you'd had to discount. So it balanced out. You weren't taking such a loss.
As a buyer, did you have a budget that you were allotted for a particular period? Who allotted the budget?
The management.
Right, and was that allotted on the basis of how much you'd sold in the previous period, or how did they decide what they would give you?
Mr. Gooding introduced a very good scheme. That you had a list of what your suppliers and what you had spent the previous season, and you. He would give you a percentage that you could go up. Now, if for some reason you didn't, a range was offered and you didn't feel that it was, you could sell it, so that you didn't spend as much with that supplier, so then that gave you a credit that you could spend a little more with the next. And you always were encouraged to save a certain percentage of your budget for your United Stores buying, as you wouldn't be inhibited.
The United Stores, this was the group, as you say, James Smith and probably Smith and Coe in Auckland and places like that.
And there was H&J Smith. There were South Island people. There was a girl in Timaru, her and I used to wait for each other at the airport.
So roughly what percentage of your budget would you spend with the United Group, and what percentage would be spent, say, just... You're
with
buying
the,
individually.
Long time ago.
Sure.
I can't really remember.
No, that's fine. You've talked about a few changes. In your time at PDC, what were the biggest changes that you saw over that period as they impacted on you?
Saturday trading.
Tell me about that.
Well, it started off, they had a big union meeting down in the old Opera House. And, of course, people had to pass the fabric shop to go to it. And there was a buyer from C&M Ross. And she walked past and she saw that I wasn't attending the meeting. I was keeping the shop open, and she stuck her head in and said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just holding the fort." She said, "Well, I hope you're doing that when they introduce Sunday trading," never dreaming that it would happen. So yes, Saturday trading was the big one.
What year was that?
Four.
I can check that easily enough.
I can't remember.
So a lot of the other staff have mentioned this as a big a sort of a watershed, if you like.
Yes.
Both management and shop floor staff. How did the union interact with management from your perspective?
Well, the one meeting that I went to, they didn't want to hear anything from the floor. It was all cut and dry. And we were required then to rosseter our staff, and they had a day off in lieu.
This is after Saturday training came at training. How about before, when you had the meeting in the Opera House around that period? What kind of union activity can you remember around you in the when they were protesting against it before it was introduced?
My impression was that they didn't want to hear anything from the floor. They blocked any person that had a valid argument against it. And I remember Brian Gaskin. He owned his own fabric shop, but he was the buyer for Collinson and Cunningham's fabric department at the time, and he had some very valid points, and he was just ignored.
So you say he was ignored by who?
By the people that were running the meeting, the union.
Who was running the meet? So what you're saying is that there were people who thought Saturday trading mightn't be too bad, but the union blocked them out. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, okay. Because the impression that I've been given is that a lot of the managers weren't very keen on Saturday trading either.
No.
No, they weren't.
We were so fortunate at PDC. We were given if we worked Friday nights, and we were given meal money. We had no complaints.
So, with the Saturday trading coming in, who do you feel was most in favour of it and who not?
Well, I don't think our management were in favour of it. I don't think that at all.
And the workers?
No. But it was a fait accompli, I think. It was. We had to go with the flow. But none of us could envisage a Sunday trade.
Anybody like a cup of tea?